Case number 03-1257 et al. Gas Transmission Northwest Corporation Petitioner versus Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Ms. Stetson for the petitioners, Ms. Fasella for the respondent.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Kate Stetson. I represent North Baja Pipeline and Gas Transmission Northwest Corporation. This case is about collateral requirements, the amount of security that a non-creditworthy shipper must post to receive service on a pipeline. The Commission has acknowledged that it has tolerated, in its words, considerable variance among pipeline collateral requirements.
Has that happened since the 2005 policy?
Not since the 2005 policy, Your Honor, because to my knowledge, this is the first case to challenge the policy since 2005. But understand the 2005...
Let's assume that it is applied consistently in the wake of the 2005 policy. How does that affect your argument?
It doesn't affect it, Your Honor, because the 2005 policy was nothing more than a reiteration of the policy the Commission has said has always been in place. The Commission's repeated mantra below was, even before 2005, that it has a general policy. The general policy has been in place since Order Number 436 in 1985, Order Number 636 in 1992, and its general policy
Didn't it acknowledge that there might have been some inconsistency in tariffs that weren't reviewed for this issue, but in any event, they're going to standardize the policy going forward, recognizing that in individual cases, companies can show, pipelines can show the facts and circumstances require an exception.
It did acknowledge the considerable variance in pipeline tariffs, yes, but let me take issue in particular with your comment that the policy standardized anything. What the Commission did in 2005 was just as it always had done. It said, we have a general policy. Our general policy is 3 months. But we pointed out below, back when the Commission was reiterating this general policy of 3 months collateral, that on at least 17 different occasions, and you can see these at Joint Appendix 206 to 208, the Commission had tolerated something other than 3 months collateral in a tariff.
Many of those cases are where there was no dispute, so the tariffs were just sanctioned without any inquiry.
Yes, Your Honor, that's true, but I'm not familiar with any Commission precedent or precedent from this court that assigns some kind of value to the amount of discussion.
Really? Well, what about the famous quotation from Justice Scalia about drive-by jurisdictional decisions? That is, we often have wrongly accepted jurisdiction over cases because no one has disputed the question, but when we go back and actually look at it, we say, well, those cases don't count. Right?
Absolutely, Your Honor. But understand the Commission's charge here is a little bit different. Under the APA, the Commission has an obligation to distinguish.
Well, now, wait a minute. Don't we have an obligation never to issue an advisory opinion and to decide a case where we have no jurisdiction?
Sure. But when the Commission the Commission's position here is that it might not have looked closely enough at certain tariffs, and maybe it just let some things slide and it approved the tariffs nonetheless. These tariffs, by the way, that remain in place to this day for pipelines with existing capacity, nothing new, nothing expansion, nothing project financed, and still have 12-month or 6-month or unlimited discretion.
How many of those pipelines were newly constructed pipelines?
Of the eight that we listed in Joint Appendix 206, five, I think, at the time they were certificated, were newly constructed. But one of them, for example,
Northern. So that's still covered. I mean, that's not even really a variance then, because that's still, under FERC's 2005 policy, going to be eligible for the longer collateral requirement.
No, because here's the catch. They're not new anymore. They were new 27 years ago or 12 years ago or 10 years ago.
I'm saying when you point to them as examples of variance, at the time those tariffs were approved, weren't they newly constructed? Wasn't FERC considering newly constructed pipelines?
At the time they were approved, 27 years ago.
Okay, so when you point to them as examples, I don't really think it gets you very far in terms of those examples in terms of variance, because that's actually consistent with FERC's 2005 policy, not inconsistent in any way, as I understand it.
It's consistent with FERC's, you know, evolution towards this fine gradation among the way that it's treated collateral requirements, but also
your
recognize what
basically it's an unreasonable distinction, not that it's inconsistent.
Absolutely. As to those tariffs, which when they were approved were new capacity, that's an unreasonable distinction.
I have a couple of threshold questions. What is the how do you define the non-creditworthy shipper? What does that mean?
A non-creditworthy shipper is a shipper that has an investment rating of something below investment grade, a junk bond investment rating.
That's what
and
I thought.
In those circumstances, if the if shipper...
Now, the second question I have is, goes really to the economic motivation of your case. I'm a little puzzled. Why do you care, economically, not legally, economically, why do you care whether these considerations, that is the risk of remarketing, is included in your rate base or whether it's attributed to an individual shipper?
Because
I'm not asking the legal question. The legal argument is, oh, we think it should be the cause of the one who did it, not the general shipper population. But in economic terms, why do you care?
We wouldn't care if we had any certainty that this actually would be included in our rate base.
But well, FERC said they're going to do it.
FERC has flatly said they would.
You think it's a phony promise.
This is what FERC has said.
Yeah.
FERC has said, you can take care of this in your rate case. Don't worry. We have said, how can that be? You've never done this in the 70 years that you've examined rates for these sorts of risks. You can't do it under your and the D.C. circuits.
If our opinion were to take FERC's representation as binding, would you then no longer have a concern?
I think that it would be an interesting question whether there would be a judicial estoppel argument that we could raise in the ongoing rate case. But our point, our APA point...
If FERC makes a representation to us, yes, we will take this up in the rate base, and our opinion accepts that representation, it would be, to say the least, rather hazardous for FERC to say subsequently, we're not going to do it anyway.
It would. I would question whether FERC's comment, which is that these sorts of business risks, the risks that not a pipeline has, you know, whether a pipeline in particular is heavily leveraged or not, but a pipeline's shippers, those secondary or tertiary risks, can be completely recaptured in a rate case. They have never said that. They've said, well, these sorts of
business risks. Wouldn't your argument be that whatever FERC says about you to us, how can that bind the creditworthy shippers who will come in during your rate proceeding and say, this is very nice, they made this commitment to Judge Silberman,
but
we weren't there.
Absolutely.
And we didn't have a chance to argue the other side.
Well, precisely.
That's true. They could litigate that, but FERC, it would certainly bind FERC.
But it's precisely the point that we made below.
So in other words, if you had that, all right, the bottom line is, if you had that situation, you would have no objection.
If we had an ironclad guarantee
ironclad guarantees are...
Let's talk about specific.
If you knew you were going to be able to cover yourself against this risk in your rate base, you would not be troubled.
If we had the sort of specific guarantee that FERC has not given us here, that we could, in a rate case, recapture precisely the remarketing risk we're trying to guard against here, that would be an interesting question of judicial estoppel. But on the APA
front... He's not asking for the estoppel.
Yes,
he's asking
yes,
just the economic question. Assume there weren't any other shippers in this, et cetera. Does it matter to you whether you collect... You cover your risk by collateral or you cover your risk through the rate? Imagine this were the only shipper.
Sure. As a purely economic question, and understand the many limits to that, the answer is probably no, because we're covered one way or another. But And there are so many conditions that follow after that. The problems are that what FERC is suggesting that we do is something that FERC has never done. And we pointed this out in the technical comments after we made our presentation several years ago to FERC. And FERC first raised this issue of whether you could kind of recapture this remarketing risk in our rates. We said, in 70 years, you've never done that. And you can't do that for the reason that Judge Garland pointed out. It violates the cost causation principle to put the burden on creditworthy.
Would it be illegal for FERC to do it?
It would not be illegal, but it would contravene the principles underlying a basic rate case.
No, the principles are norm. The term normally costs are applied against individuals. Not often they're spread across the entire shipper.
Well, look at it this way. There's a whole line of FERC precedent that says.
You're not suggesting here that it would be illegal for FERC to take that into account in the rate base.
No, I'm saying it would be a sharp departure from 70 years of FERC precedent.
Well, they never addressed that specific question with respect to collateral in an ROE proceeding, have they?
I'm sorry, Judge.
They've never actually addressed the question of whether the credit risk with respect to shippers can be put into the rate.
They haven't, but I'd venture that the fact that there are this dozen or more different collateral requirements other than 3 months suggests that the FERC doesn't treat collateral in a rate case the way that it is suggesting collateral be treated here. Shipper risk, if it were a component of the rate case, we'd know about it. And we put the commission on notice in our briefing below that in our research, we hadn't found over 70 years of precedence any occasion where the commission had performed the kind of critical inquiry, not into the risk of a pipe.
Has there ever been one where somebody's asked them to make that inquiry with respect to shippers' credit risk?
No, that I don't know. But the commission never came back and said, here are all the occasions.
What you just said, I think, is a very good point, and we'll be asking the commission just that point.
Now, I have another question for you that came out of the reply brief, I thought. I was a little confused about that. I thought at one point you were arguing you didn't even have to provide any service to the non-creditworthy shipper. But then in the reply brief you said, no, we don't really mean that. We really have to provide service to the non-creditworthy shipper, but we don't have to provide any particular collateral requirement. I was puzzled. Why would you be saying you don't have to provide a collateral requirement? You want collateral requirements. I didn't understand that in the reply.
Right. I think the distinction, Judge Silberman, is that we've consistently taken the position that if a shipper comes to us and says, I have a junk bond investment rating, but I'd really like a 20 or 30-year contract on your pipeline, we can say no, because the shipper doesn't meet our creditworthiness requirements. What you're referring to is a situation where there's a current shipper on our pipeline who has a 20 or 30-year requirement. The commission has pointed out that you have to first seek abandonment before you can boot that deadbeat shipper off your pipeline.
Right. Then that was a little confusing in the reply. You have the right to refuse to provide service to a non-creditworthy shipper.
Yes, we do. And we have the right, and the commission has approved.
So long as it's not an existing shipper.
If it's an existing shipper, you have to jump through the abandonment hoop first. That's the distinction, yes. And the commission, in fact, has approved tariffs, including a couple of our competitors, Kern and Mojave, that don't have collateral requirements, that don't reach out and make special provision for shippers that don't otherwise meet.
I want to hear this carefully. Are you saying you're at a competitive disadvantage? You said they approved requirements on tariffs on competitors. I want to hear that again.
Yes.
I was wondering whether they're underlying this was a competitive problem.
Oh, yes. I think it does present a competitive problem.
Explain,
if you have...
Explain exactly.
Examine two pipelines, Kern and us, GTN. A shipper who has a junk bond rating approaches both of us. Kern says, we won't even talk to you. if we have a collateral requirement of 3 months, and it can post that 3 months collateral, which the commission says is sufficient to protect us against the risk of default on a 20 or 30-year contract.
You could have refused to provide them service altogether.
That's our position with an initial shipper, yes. Move the frame forward and imagine
okay,
a circum...
So you, So you and your competitor are in there, exactly the same position with respect to an initial shipper. There's no competitive disadvantage.
Our position is that we would be able to refuse service, yes. The Commission has never really joined issue on this, but that is our position
so
as to an existing.
There's no competitive disadvantage problem.
As to a shipper approaching the system, that's right. The competitive disadvantage would come later. Imagine that Kern, which has in its discretion the ability to either accept a whole bunch of collateral or none at all, chooses the former course. It accepts 15 months of collateral from a junk bond shipper, and the shipper enters into a contract.
How would they do it? How would they accept 15 months if FERC's policy is only 3 months? I don't get it.
Because the current tariff that Kern and some of these other pipelines have give the pipeline the discretion to demand whatever collateral the pipeline feels is necessary to protect.
That's what I was trying to get at. I was wondering whether there was something here that was competitive.
Yes, yes.
You're asserting that some of your direct competitors can ask for higher collateral amounts than you can.
On the tariffs that currently exist, that's exactly right. That if you have a non-creditworthy shipper who posts 15 or 12 or 6 months of collateral on pipeline X and only posts 3 months on us, and we both lose that shipper, the shipper defaults on both of our contracts, we're in the hole
that
far
one,
more
I
than
take
the
it
other
that tariff wasn't litigated, right?
I'm sorry?
That tariff was not litigated? That issue wasn't litigated.
The Kern tariff and the other tariffs that resemble it were not litigated. Yeah. I don't know the extent to which comments were rendered on it or not. But again, the volume of discussion preceding a FERC approval of a tariff doesn't render the approval any more or less strong.
Well, I guess I disagree with that. I mean, that suggests that if once something slips by their attention, they have to, even if it's totally illegal, they're stopped from, even if you would agree that it was totally illegal, they're stopped from ever attacking a competitor in that regard.
Well, to begin with, this isn't just an example of one outlier slipping by their attention. There are 17, and I know my time is up, but if
No, before you go on, here's a question. Don't you have a mechanism for relief on that? Could you challenge your competitor's tariff situation if you were in a competitive disadvantage?
Honestly, Judge, I don't know whether a competitor can seek a Section 5 case. FERC could do it itself. FERC could sua sponte initiate a Section 5 case, and we know it hasn't. All we know from FERC is FERC's acknowledgement in its notice of proposed rulemaking that it then withdrew that it has tolerated.
Do you have the ability to go back now? I mean, imagine you lost on this point. Would you have the ability to go back and ask FERC to even the playing field? And if they refuse to come back here and say they've refused to even the playing field, what would you not be able to do that?
Well, that in a way is our request right now.
Well, assuming for the moment that we think their decision is correct, why should they have to even it by giving everybody the incorrect result rather than giving everybody the correct result?
They have two options, Judge, under the Westcar case that another panel of this court issued earlier. When it is confronted, as it has been here, with not just an outlier or two, but
assume we don't believe you on that. Okay, I want to narrow this as much as we can. Assume you have one competitor who slipped by, and it's a big competitor. It hurts you a lot. Is there something that would prevent you? Is there no way to force FERC to confront the issue and then to have it reviewed if they disagree?
Assuming that we were to lose on each of these
yes.
series of challenges
yes.
here, which is contrary precedent they haven't explained, policy they haven't supported.
All of them. You're running out of time. All of them.
Correct. We lose on all.
Yeah.
Of course, we could go back and ask FERC to level the playing field, but after-the-fact, quixotic effort that we have a procedure in that we could ask FERC to do anything.
Well,
but
from
that
FERC's
doesn't
perspective,
absolve.
Well, from FERC's perspective, it's whether to continue making mistakes or to start doing it consistent with how they did the 2005 policy.
I think you are giving Judge Kavanaugh FERC too much credit in saying that it makes that it has acknowledged. In saying that FERC has acknowledged it's made mistakes, what it has said with respect to all of these different tariffs are any number of things. That one was new. That one was expansion. That
it
was
acknowledged
project
that
finance.
This issue might not have been considered in some previous pre-2005 tariffs.
Yes, but yet those tariffs were approved. Those tariffs were approved under the Section 4 of the Natural Gas Act as being just and reasonable. And what we know from Exxon versus FERC is that FERC had it right the first time. There are many rate components that can be found to be just and reasonable, not just one. So it has the option, when it is confronted with the litany of contrary precedents that we put forward, to do two things. It can either say, all of those are distinguishable, and here's why. Here's a relevant reason why. They haven't
done that. They did that for a good number of them, right, for the newly, I mean, going back to the newly constructed versus the existing.
We would say they attempted to distinguish them, but then the reasoning was not relevant, that these pipelines are no longer new, they're no longer expansion, they're no longer project financed, and yet the tariff provisions remained. And then as for some, as you pointed out, they don't fall into that category. Louisiana, Nevada, which is a 12-month collateral requirement, that was existing, that wasn't new or project financed. All of the 6-month collateral requirements were existing, neither new nor project financed. All of the pipeline's discretion requirements on Joint Appendix 208.
Council, I think we'll have a chance to ask FERC. Incidentally, I should like to state, I, without regard to the merits of this case, I thought the brief filed by petitioner was excellent.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate that.
Good morning, Your Honors. Beth Pacella for FERC. I'd like to point out just by pointing out what the commission pointed out in PG&E 1 at JA 111 paragraph 4, which is that GTN acknowledged in its filing, its rate filing with this with the commission, that the commission's general policy has to been to limit a pipeline's alternative collateral requirement to 3 months of charges unless it's project financed or newly constructed. And if you look at JA 43, 41, and 46, you'll see that GTN made this exact acknowledgement. We understand that your general policy is to only allow for 3 months unless it's a new construction or project finance. And for them to now come in and pretend that they don't understand that there's been a general policy for almost 20 years about this is really...
They understood. They just thought it was erratic. Council, what about our question concerning the potential competitive disadvantage? What is your response?
The commission has made clear, again, we... for 2 decades, but certainly since the 2005 policy, that 3 months collateral is all that's allowed.
What happens to the
circumstances?
In the example she gave, Kern, a competitor has a different collateral policy. What's the answer to that?
If someone brings to the commission's attention that a pipeline has, in a complaint proceeding, that a pipeline has a different policy, the commission will apply its policy statement. It will apply its longstanding policy. And
to an existing tariff that you've already approved?
Of course. And what the commission has said, that's exactly what it did regarding North Baja here. The commission had approved longer than a 3-month collateral requirement in the Section 4 rate proceeding and then said, it slipped by. We shouldn't have done that. And because it was still involved in a rate proceeding regarding North Baja on rehearing, it took its own actions sua sponte under Section 5 and changed that proceeding.
In one case I've read, you allowed the longer collateral period to equalize with a competitor, didn't you?
I'm sorry, I don't understand, Your Honor.
Isn't one case I read, you allowed a longer collateral period to meet a competitor?
That's not true, Your Honor. What petitioners are pointing to there is... They are wrong about that, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
That is, trying to remember the case name.
Okay, I'll go back and look at that. Now, next question.
Let me explain why the commission did it there, even though I'm sorry I can't remember the case name right now. What the commission did there was it said, I really have to fight it. Let me find it. It is.
It's all right. Just tell me about it. I remember vaguely.
The petitioners there had argued that it was because it was competitor, but then the commission explained that it wasn't because it didn't speak to the competitor portion. It gave a completely different rationale, which hopefully I'm going to remember before I sit down.
My initial question that concerned me about the rate base. Council says, look, it'd be great if FERC allowed us to put this market risk in our rate base, but FERC has never allowed it.
First of all, that's not true. Ozark is a perfect... FERC has allowed it. It has occurred in the Ozark case, which the commission cited repeatedly. The commission recognized there, as the pipeline pointed out, that one of their two major customers was in bankruptcy and had the ability to reject the contract. And the commission, as a result of that, and the fact that they had lots of excess capacity on showing that they would have trouble remarketing.
Well, that sounds like an ex post situation. What about ex ante? I'm sorry. What about looking at it prospectively? In other words, the pipeline files a tariff and they say, in our rate base, we want a calculation of X.
Well, that's exactly what's happened right now, Your Honor, in GTN's rate case. That's exactly what's happened. Well, they've passed almost double their return on equity because of business risks. Specifically, the commission talked about, and you can...
They asked for or they got?
They asked for. It's okay. It's still proceeding.
What is the answer to the argument about the cost causation principle? They come in and they say we have two suppliers. One has an awful credit rating. One has a platinum credit rating. We want a higher rate to both, because you have to have the same rate, because one of them is a bad credit risk.
That the commission has said in these orders, and we believe previously as well in Ozark and Williston Basin, that those business risks are considered as...
But they say that contravenes the cost causation principle, and I've been unable to find in any of the orders the answer to that.
The commission said in response to that is that it's a business risk. It's not a cost causation issue. The commission specifically acknowledged in...
I know they acknowledged the cost causation issue.
Oh,
I think
know,
that as the petitioner appropriately states, FERC has no problem stating the arguments of the other side.
Well,
what I want to know is where they say why cost causation principles don't apply here.
In paragraph 49 at JA 501, the commission sets out the issue. And in the very next paragraph, the commission says, quote, such arguments are contradicted by the testimony of GTN. GTN's own witnesses said, the question is, are there other factors the commission should consider in evaluating a pipeline's risk? And the answer by GTN's own witness is yes. Another factor is the credit quality of the shippers that hold the pipeline's
risk. That doesn't answer the question, well, whether it's
so may be that they are arguing inconsistently. Wouldn't be the first time that a petitioner argues inconsistently.
Well, they're doing what the commission told them to do.
But
the commission said,
what is the answer to the cost causation question?
Answer is that it's a business risk. The commission
why
has
is
talked
that an answer?
Because business risks are, the commission has made a policy determination that these types of business risks are spread throughout all of the customers. Now, this isn't something that these customers... We're not talking about constant defaults in a system. And let's talk about what the commission faced in these circumstances. They have, in petitioner's view, they think that it should be done a certain way, but the commission has set out a policy
Is there a case that this explains what you just said, that business risks are spread across all customers, both the risky ones and the non-risky ones?
Yes.
What case is that?
In the Ozark case, again, which the commission cited repeatedly throughout this proceeding, the commission said that it's finding at 61 in the first Ozark case at 61108, the commission said our finding of greater risk for Ozark causes us to fix Ozark's ROE at the top of the zone of reasonableness. The commission considers this everywhere, and then the same thing. The commission considers that applies to everybody. ROE is applied to everybody, so it's innate in the analysis.
That is not an explanation.
Well, I guess I'm not understanding. That's the commission's policy is that business, and that's been very longstanding. Business risks are spread. Debt risks, the risk of having to remarket, all of those items are done in the return on equity. It's a business risk. The commission made that policy determination.
You say the kind of risk at issue here will be considered business risk and apply in the way you just stated?
Yes, that's exactly it. And the commission's made that very clear, and that's what's happening in GTN's rate case. So it's not as if this isn't being followed. It's not as if GTN isn't taking advantage of being able to do this. And this has been set out long this way. Each and every example that the...
Council, I can think of a number of economic policy reasons which might lead FERC to take that position, which they have taken. Unfortunately, FERC doesn't think it's wise to spell out those policy views to explain why it is they're treating this as a business risk rather than an individual cost.
I disagree, Your Honor. I think in this case, the Commission made very, very clear what it's concerned about. And it's amazing to me that the words open access haven't been mentioned by petitioner, hardly in their brief or even in this argument.
Well, they did. In their brief, they said you used the words open access and didn't explain how that's relevant here.
The Commission absolutely did. JA 507, for example, the Commission said, the Commission is concerned with providing shippers access to pipeline transportation capacity at reasonable terms.
I understand that, but open access is about open in the sense of not discriminatory, right? That everybody's treated the same.
Open access means that everybody, it means a little something different in light of 436 and 636,
okay.
That everybody really gets access to everybody else's systems. So
even people
it didn't
who can't
used to
pay,
be that way.
Even people who don't pay?
Of course not, even people that don't pay, because then, of course, if,
right.
if you're an
why
existing shipper,
it,
you
why
can
is
have
it inconsistent with the open access principle to have more collateral required of somebody who may end up not being able to pay?
As the Commission explained, for example, at JA 497 to 98 in paragraph 39, that the Commission, that the whole historic policy on creditworthiness was designed to ensure all shippers had equal access to service without unreasonable barriers to entry. And so the Commission.
Why is it unreasonable to require more of a shipper likely to default than one not likely to default? Why is that an unreasonable barrier to entry? I mean, you could say the same thing. I mean, it's an unreasonable barrier to home ownership to require somebody who's not likely to pay their mortgage to put up a greater down payment than somebody who is.
The difference here, Your Honor, is that this is a monopoly environment. We have only limited number of pipelines and open access.
I understand. You can take that into consideration. I still don't understand why the fact that even if there's only one pipeline, what is unreasonable from an open access point of view about asking for more money? This isn't a question of how much is the right amount. This is only the question of whether they can ask for more collateral
if
from someone likely to
default.
If you let
me explain what the Commission said in the next part of the paragraph
which
is
paragraph are you
in
on?
The same paragraph, which paragraph 39 at JA 497 to 498. The Commission says it strives to establish credit and collateral policies that balance the interests of the pipeline in receiving adequate security. Therefore, it has, well, I'll continue, while protecting shippers against unduly harsh collateral requirements
right. So the question
and ensuring that pipeline service is reasonably available to all.
Isn't FERC really saying, if they haven't spelled it out, but they're really saying that we think the ultimate consumer will be benefited if there's more shippers allowed to get onto the system, even some whose credit rating may be less favorable, spread, redistribute that risk amongst everybody because that will enhance the total supply. Is that basically
the first part
saying?
Of what you say is true, Your Honor. The second part, I'm not sure, is you're I think trying to require something to be here that doesn't need to be here. Let me start back with
understand what.
Well, let me explain.
Trying to understand why what Judge Garland was pushing hard on is what's the connection of open access.
That's well. Let me start with that, please, if I could. If I could talk about open access.
Is it not correct that what FERC is basically saying is we want more supply of this product, and therefore the risk, if we allow the pipeline to impose a higher collateral on some of the riskier operations, they may not get into the system. And we'd rather spread that risk throughout all shippers.
I guess what I need to do is just step back a moment and start from the beginning of what the Commission's policy is. The Commission has determined that the policy is that the purpose of collateral, unlike what petitioners think the purpose of collateral is to protect the pipelines during the time period that is required for termination. That's a 3-month period, therefore generally 3 months collateral. What the purpose of return on equity is and the risk, that portion is to protect the pipeline during the time period that's required to remarket the capacity. Two separate things. So from petitioner's point of view, they need more collateral because they want more time to remarket. Well, the commission is saying you'll get that in return on equity. But all you need collateral to cover for is the time period it's going to take you so that you're put in the position of being able to remarket. It's two separate components that this policy.
Now, you're making a representation to this court that FERC is going to allow petitioners to get in their rate base the risk of default.
There is no question, based
not
on the commission's orders, that what
happened. The risk of remarketing.
There's no question that what GTN did is completely consistent.
You know what I mean by
absolutely.
Can you give a yes or no to Judge Silverman's question?
The answer is yes, and that's based on these orders. I'm not taking any risk saying that. They are going to be able to go there. Now, look, what happens in a return on equity rate case, you consider everything.
Right.
So we don't know for sure that they could go with all of this evidence. It may not increase their return on equity at all. So I'm not making that promise. What I am promising is absolutely, FERC considers it
this
not
is a
only appropriate
factor to be considered in the return on equity.
This is exactly where it's considered. The commission doesn't say you get 3 months and then you're on your own. The commission says you get three months.
Let me repeat the statement. This is a legitimate factor, the risk of remarketing, to be considered in the rate base
in the return on equity.
Return on equity.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And the commission made that clear here. That's exactly what the policy is. 3 months is only intended to cover the time period that it takes to terminate a contract, abandonment. That's all it's intended for. So, and that's what it covers. It takes about 3 months to terminate. And the commission explains what that period is. If you look at JA 354 to 55, in note 19, in that paragraph, and then in note 19, the commission exactly explains. You don't get billed for a month. Then they get some time to pay, and so it takes some time for you to realize that they're not paying, and then you can cancel. Remember one more important thing here. These pipelines can move to terminate and abandon service just because someone's not meeting collateral. When you have somebody, they could be making all of their regular payments. They could be paying for all the shipping on the system. But if they can't meet 12 months collateral, they can be terminated. Well, that's what they're asking for. They're asking for 12 months collateral. Now,
their answer is that you don't have to terminate them.
Well,
right? FERC can refuse to terminate them.
First of all, let me point out, as petitioners said in their own brief on remand to the commission at JA 449, they said, quote, the fundamental reason the commission should authorize a pipeline to terminate service for a shipper that refuses to meet its collateral requirement is that a pipeline must have some mechanism to enforce compliance with the terms of its tariff. It's in their tariff. The commission can't set up a policy where it's going to say, sure, you can have 12 months collateral, but we're not going to allow you to enforce it. That's what they're asking this court to understand that the commission can do. Of course not. The commission, of course, has to approve abandonment, but under certain rules.
Okay, let me ask, I just have a couple questions I'm not sure I understand. There's a part of the commission's opinion in which it says that collateral won't reduce remarketing risk.
What the commission is talking about is exactly what I was just explaining about that the 3 months.
Which is that it's covered under ROE.
It's covered under
but
ROE.
They are not suggesting that collateral doesn't affect the ability of the pipeline to cover its financial risk of remarketing.
What they're saying is if we gave you 12 months collateral, if we allowed that, yes, you would have some, 8.5 months or whatever extra of money in which you could then deal with it during that time. But what they're saying is what we're worried about concerning collateral is this initial pre-having to market risk. It's not going to help you with that, and you're going to be covered in
ROE. The commission is not saying, as a matter of economics, that having more collateral doesn't reduce remarketing risk.
No. The commission's saying it's... What it's saying is it's two separate concepts. All what the commission is trying to get
concepts, and one of them is covered by ROE.
Exactly.
Is that what you're
saying? And that's the remarketing risk, not the termination risk. Petitioners are conflating the two, and they're not the same. And it's the commission that was delegated the responsibility by Congress to set rate policy. And it's thought long and hard about this. This is how it's been done, honestly, for years. The fact that I can't point to other cases, it's just the norm. It's not exceptional. I wanted to point out as well, if I could, I see my light is on, which I am sorry I hadn't been paying attention to.
Can you be quick?
Yes. I just want to say that all of the cases that petitioner points to in finally actually citing cases and not just tariff provisions in their brief, their first brief at page 36 in footnote 7, they all either did not discuss creditworthiness at all, as we were pointing out, the commission said we probably just drove by and didn't look at it because no one protested, or they involved, for example, the Kern case at 64 FERC 61049 involved the project finance pipeline, which is an exception.
Can I ask you one more question? Why is the financial risk different between construction and post-construction? I appreciate that there's a difference as to whether it'll get, is the argument a bit like what Judge Silverman was suggesting, that you want to get these things constructed?
Yes.
And that's more important?
That's exactly
from,
what it
from
is.
From the public interest than whether or not they get paid once it's running?
In the
once
balancing,
it's
a balancing of risks.
But that sunk cost was a little silly.
What the commission's saying is, and it says it repeatedly.
Differently in the second order.
Yeah. I think the commission certainly
some
clarifies as it goes on.
What's the best
says,
way that you think they
well,
say
Well, if you look at 356, J356, paragraph 23, for example, the commission says that a pipeline can refuse to construct.
Yeah.
And we need to give them an incentive to construct, and so they need to be able to assure themselves and their lenders that this is really going to be covered.
What's the difference in terms of their risk between being able to pay back the construction lenders and being able to pay back, you know, get their profit or pay back their debt or any of the other things?
These are normal business risks. That's the commission's point.
Why isn't construction a normal business risk?
Isn't Judge Garland absolutely correct?
I'm sorry, perhaps I didn't understand your question.
Carefully to what he said.
Yeah, perhaps I misunderstood.
Repeat the question, counsel.
From the pipeline's point of view, what is the difference whether it's unable to pay back its or get the construction loans or the construction payments versus whether it's able to get the profit that it had expected or the difference as to whether it's able to pay back its debt
is the same
or
thing, right.
Able to amortize,
what,
finish its
what
paying
the commission
off the
has
debt.
Said is that it's balancing, it's doing a balancing here. And the commission says in the pre-construction phase, the balancing is different.
Why?
Than it,
why? I
because
know, why?
They don't have to build.
So that so underlying
it's all
this
about open
is
access.
To build
we
as
need,
much as possible.
Well,
is that
to
right?
build,
you're more concerned about
sure,
getting it built.
Well, to make sure, Your Honor, that there is construction, we need construction out there. It's extremely expensive to build, and so people have to. I mean, the commission, you know, talks quite a bit about that. That you know, in that same paragraph, prior to construction, the pipeline is able to refuse to commit its capital. Well, once they've already built, they've taken on all normal business risks regarding that pipeline. These are normal business risks. These are not extraordinary.
Okay, thank you. You don't, but I have two questions, so.
Okay.
And you've heard them both, actually. The first one is, what's the answer to the argument that they made about termination? Yes, they have the ability to do termination, but what would be the point of permitting you to impose a certain collateral requirement and then having to terminate and then not terminating if it's not met?
I think, Judge Garland, the argument that the commission advances that if we had a 12-month collateral requirement and a non-creditworthy shipper on the system failed to post 12 months collateral and we suspended and moved to terminate, then the commission wouldn't move to terminate, defeats their argument.
Well, I understand this.
Harm.
Actually, this goes in a big circle. So
yes.
I want to know on your side, what's the strength of your argument? You argue they can always refuse to allow termination at the end. Now, how is that to your advantage for them to allow you to put in a 12-month requirement but not terminate anybody who doesn't put it in, who doesn't pay it up?
Setting aside the question whether they could, you know, make the kind of blanket statement that we won't terminate in the event of 12 months collateral not being posted,
well,
we would
I thought that was your argument. You say don't worry about it till termination.
No, our argument is that harm that the commission alleges would befall a shipper if it rests in the hands of the commission, doesn't speak to whether a particular tariff requirement is harmful or not. But the answer on the 12-month collateral is we would fervently hope it wouldn't come to that. That if a non-creditworthy shipper on the system is asked to post collateral and cannot, and its service is suspended, then sooner or later it would post the collateral if it needs that capacity. So that's a question for another day, many days hence. Let me make a couple points.
The second question I wanted to ask you was, what is your argument about the difference between the risk of pre-construction and the risk afterwards? In response to their argument that they think the public interest requires that the hand on the scale weigh heavier before construction.
Our argument is that the risks, if anything, are flipped or at least are neutral. Pipelines go back to the capital markets all the time to refinance debt, to take on more debt, to take out loans. And one of the things that a lender looks at, whether it's a lender for a project financing undertaking, whether it's new capacity or expansion capacity, or a pipeline that's been around for decades, the lender looks at the solidity of the contracts on that system. It does not matter one whit whether this pipeline is brand new or old. What matters is the level of inquiry that a lender, whether approached for a new pipeline or an old one, conducts into the quality of that pipeline service. Let me make this comment on the rate case. It is not appropriate under the Administrative Procedure Act, when confronted with a number of arguments in response to the Commission's conclusory statement that ROE can be handled, that this type of remarketing risk can be handled in a rate case, for the Commission simply to reiterate that this type of remarketing risk can be handled in a rate case. We offered several arguments, not least among them being that, to our knowledge, the Commission has never in 70 years done this. And the only response the Commission has, Judge Silberman, you saw through it, which is, in the event you have a bankrupt shipper, you have a known and measurable damage to the pipeline itself. That rightly can be factored into
counsel,
a pipeline's...
I pushed her further to ask whether you could get this in the rate case ex ante. The answer was yes.
I wish I were more trusting, Judge Silberman, but the response is that in 70 years they have never done it. There are certain principles, the cost causation principle, the known and measurable harm principle, and other issues relating to stranded capacity and how those risks get allocated that counsel firmly against this. Understand, in our rate case, we did not muster the kind of data on remarketing risk, our individual shippers, the number of defaults on our system, the dozen defaults in the last 10 years on GTN, the 5 out of 5 uncreditworthy shippers on North Baja, all of that came in this case, because this case is the case in which these issues are considered, not a rate case.
Okay, thank you,
Ms. Case is submitted.
Stand, please. This honorable court now stands adjourned until Monday morning at 9:30 a.m.
Oh, you're on. Register. He says sometimes he takes them with him to not freak out. Didn't he say that?
And then should I close on this?
It just seems like... Do you think we should lock him on?